You're listening to Pirate Cat Radio, KPCR LP 92.9 FM Los Gatos, and KMRT LP 101.9 FM Santa Cruz. Tony Duchesne here, and welcome to Drinks with Tony. This is like the ninth try of taping the show this week. I'll just come straight out with it. What I have going on in the back of my head, which really sucks, I just found out my mom has stage 4 cancer. And this is December 29th, 2025. And people are upset that Brigitte Bardot was right wing. I think people, my family's such a mess. People don't understand that I don't even have any more energy to be upset about anything, because my upset level just from the family, my family of origin, is been one on a 1 to 10. It's been, does it go to 11? Does it go to 11 since I was about 8 years old, 9 years old? So that's that. And then let's get on with the show. Get on the Drinks with Tony show. We can laugh through the tragedies, laugh and weep. Right now, I'm just kind of numb. And before I got the news, I had planned to produce this show in a very different way. And now I'm just gonna talk, and not about the family stuff. It's so convoluted. If it ever gets written down, it'll be a psychology study 300 years from now, where they'll be like, how did this happen? It's really that insane. So let's talk about what keeps hope alive in the human existence, not only that, a friend of mine, one of his really good friends just died. And, you know, this death stuff, we have our sorrows, but it's so interesting how we also relate it to ourselves. It's so important to not only growing up a Jehovah's Witness, you go to funerals so you can help. This was how I grew up when I was a kid, and this was funerals until I was in my 30s. You went to the funeral at the Kingdom Hall, and guess what the funeral was? It was a recruitment meeting for everyone who wasn't a Jehovah's Witness to become a Jehovah's Witness so they can have the truth. Oh yeah, by the way, sorry your mom died. But, you know, we all have the truth, so everything's fine. That's essentially how I grew up, and what I've learned since then, which has taken a while, is celebration of death is important. Day of the Dead. The institutions of the rituals we do as humans are important. That we when we actually go to funerals, which, you know, funerals and weddings, they're both very disconcerting for me, because they were kind of the only times that Jehovah's Witnesses could party. It's so dumb. And I wish my parents became Mormon, because at least I could have gone to college and had a understanding of not being not leaning into being window washers until the end of time, or until, you know, like my mom told me when I was in high school and getting straight A's, why are you getting straight A's? Armageddon's going to be here before you graduate. He graduated in 1987, and it's still in the head, man. It's really still, it doesn't go away. And I think that's in general for all of us in humanity. And I hate, talking, part of me doesn't like talking about the Jehovah's Witness stuff, because it seems unique. But in the end, it's really not too unique. It just has a couple of different angles of how we're going to take the life experience away from you. And, you know, too bad it wasn't taken away from me in a culture of abundance. You know, this, no, keep your head down. Don't do anything. Have roommates until you're 90, but you'll never be 90 because you're 18 now. And Armageddon will be here tomorrow and take care of. There I go. Oh my God. Sorry. Welcome to Drinks with Tony. This is my therapy session. What I want to do though is I'll go grieve on my own. You guys don't need to hear that crap. What I want to do right now is just kind of talk about the year in books a bit. And also just about books in general, especially novels. I've been working on this essay in and out for a while, and I need to just finish it up, but I'm also on other projects. But the novel is truly everything. It gives us a snapshot of humanity. It gives us a snapshot of time, and everything is story. And even in, like, as we watch the news today, on whatever political side you're on, they're all skewed. Like, there's nothing that you're watching that is not skewed towards something. So please don't pat yourself on the back for watching that, but not that. You're in the game. but that's the supposed nonfiction in journalism, and it's just it's twisted. I feel there's more truth in novels. And more truth of the moment of what's happening. So if we're reading novels that are contemporary right now, it's really given us a taste and a smell of the room of what's happening right now. And what I like to do these days a lot more is read classics. And I was just telling someone about Proust and reading In Search of Lost Time. And I never heard of the Dreyfus Affair that happened in France until I read Proust. And that felt important to me to learn about that, to learn how they dehumanized Dreyfus just because he was Jewish. And it was told in a fictional, as Proust was, what was Proust? They called it he was kind of auto fiction. He was doing his thing. But at these little bougie party scenes, I'm on volume 6 of it, of In Search of Lost Time right now. And let me tell you, the bougie party scenes get really boring after about volume 3. The great stuff is his relationship with Gilbert and his relationship with Albertine, and Françoise is just so funny, and I adore her. And if I had a crush on any fiction literary character, I would say right now it would be Françoise. I would be making late night calls on Françoise while Proust was upstairs sleeping. I'd be like, bonjour, Françoise. I'll go back to my butchered French. But and I'll talk about being in Paris this year a little bit, because that was really important to me too. Anyway, let me just talk about the books real quick. We should do nothing quick. We'll relax. See? And for those of you listening on radio, aren't you glad it's drive time? So you have an alternative to people being all amped up. I say that as I love listening to Spanish Top 40 radio in Los Angeles. It's one, it helps me with my Spanish studies that I'm actively back in. And two, it's insane to hear radio that is not your native language and how insane it sounds. But when it's in your native language, I know it's insane. But I was the one when I was young. I hated morning radio and I hated radio stations in the San Francisco Bay Area until the Quake came along, KQAK. And then the Quake died, I think, in 1985 or 86. And then that's when most of the population went to Live 105, and Live 105 said, hey, we got a new demographic. Maybe we'll stop playing Huey Lewis in the news and just throw in a little Depeche Mode. And then the rest of us, we went over to college radio. So thank you, Quake, for closing down, because I didn't know what college radio was until 1985-ish. And that's when, living in Millbrae, I listened to KFJC. And that's the station where I ended up at some years later. And I still have very fond memories to this day and keep in touch with a lot of those DJs that I got to meet there. And then this brings us to the journey all the way to Drinks with Tony and here on Pirate Cat Radio. But yes, I got a list of books in front of me. Let's go to the list. 18% Gray by Zachary Karabashliev. I'm not sure if I may have talked about this on the show this year, but it was published in Bulgaria in 2008. It was translated into English in 2013, and it found its way to me in 2025. And it's just fantastic. It's a road movie. It's a point of view of a Bulgarian doing a road movie, and a road book. In a little twisted way. And, it's beautiful. It has heart. That's what it is. That's the only thing I want from a novel when I'm engaged with a novel is heart. And if it's got heart, then I'm in. So, highly recommend that. Then we got Les Miserables by, Victor Hugo. Published in 1862, and I got it in 2025, and I'm going to tell you, it's my favorite book of the year. And, I know Victor Hugo needs the clicks. Victor, you got to put the likes on Victor Hugo's social media, so, you know, that guy can live. I think he's buried like 40 minutes outside of Paris, or 45 minutes. When I was in Paris, I was like, oh, I should go visit. Where's Victor Hugo buried? Nah. I'll go to Dreyfus's headstone in Montparnasse. And I can't even, I've tried to record this episode like 9 times, so I can't even remember if I talked about Dreyfus at the beginning of this or if that was another episode. Take 9, everybody. Take 9. It'll be my geriatric boy band, my geriatric man band. It's a take on Take the, what is it? Take That, Take 9. But Les Miserables, I love traveling with books that work, and this book worked. It was my Paris book. It was my Porto book. It was my Porto, Portugal. It was my Garamish, Portugal. It was my New York City book. And and that was 6 weeks, and that I still needed more time to read it. I just sat there and sipped it in small doses at cafes, at boulangeries in Paris, mostly in the 9th arrondissement, near Saint-Georges, je ne sais pas, near Rue des Martyrs. I'll just say it in English. Martyrs. Rue des Martyrs. Which is such a great spot in Paris. And I'm sure if Parisians or anyone knows France, that was probably like the Mission District. Would that be a good comparison? I don't know. It used to be local. Now it's less local, but it's still got a local vibe. And, friends of mine, when I was in Paris, I didn't really hang out in the 19th and the 20th this time. And I really plan on exploring those neighborhoods. And people are telling me that this is the true Paris, Tony. This is where all the Parisians went when all the rents went out of control. And I'm like, all right, I'm in, because I go where the rents are not out of control. But yeah, Les Miserables. Oh, yeah. So in New York, I was approached by people. I think I talked about this with one of my guests recently, but it was just when you have a book with you, and sometimes you're approached, but it's like in Los Angeles, I don't get approached that much for when I have a book with me. But in New York, everyone approaches you. Oh, my God. What do you think? It's so much fun just to talk to people. And because you have a book and they know the book and they know the story. So what do? We bond on story. And these people actually have read this, 1,250-page epic. And so you get not to only bond on that, but also know that you both read the book. And reading is easy, and it's not easy. It's not easy in these days and age. These days and ages. Das avec ages. Because we're distracted. And so we need to read so we can get out of the algorithm. And people send me digital books, and I'm like, nope, not reading anything digital. I'm always reading. I'm always killing trees. I want to kill more trees. I want the book in my hand. The book in my hand doesn't have to be powered up. It doesn't have to have a battery. It doesn't glare in my eyes. And I can sit there and make my little notations on it. And I could sit there, and as I'm reading it, people come up to me and go, what do you think? And you know what? I do that as much as possible, too. Even in Los Angeles, I still don't understand Los Angeles as a city when it comes to vibe. I guess because Los Angeles is just sprawl. But, like, people, even in my apartment building, it's like people are scared to talk to each other. And then sometimes I'll get it, like, looked at, like somebody might know me. And here's the two celebrities that people have said. And usually they're not of, United States born, but here's what I've been compared to this year. So one, I'm losing hair, and two, I'm gaining weight. All right. Paul Giamatti and Vince Gilligan. So I guess I got a Paul Giamatti, Vince Gilligan vibe, except I'm 6 feet tall. But so sometimes people will like really stare at me if I'm in certain areas where there are celebrity sightings, it's not me. They're going, that guy looks kind of familiar, you know. If he would lose a little weight and have a little more hair, it looked like Tony Duchesne. But that guy looks like Paul Giamatti and Vince Gilligan. It's good. Those are two great people in what I consider the world of showbiz. But the reason I even bring that up is because in Los Angeles, it's just weird. People will look at you, or they're scared to look at you. And then I talk to people in my building and go, hey, are you new to the building? And they're like, oh, it's like they have a heart attack. And then you find out, oh yeah, they're from Irvine, or they're from, the ones that are cool are like, oh yeah, I'm from Cincinnati. And they have a joie de vivre to them. And the ones that are just like, oh, I'm in the city now. And I'm like, this isn't a city. This is just suburb. And that's why I just get New York energy. And not to dirt on Los Angeles. There's so much great about Los Angeles. It's just, as Andrew Rubin said on the podcast a couple weeks ago, it's like a two-year-old with a crayon drew how to do the infrastructure of Los Angeles. And that's why I need to get out of Los Angeles and go to places like Paris and New York. And especially Paris. Paris, I just has such a more of a respect culture. It's just so nice to be on a metro and not have some dude blasting his Bluetooth and another three people on Zoom calls on their speakerphones. One doing their 12-step meeting. You're just going, I can hear all of you. Is that Sex, Loves, Addicts, Anonymous? Uh-huh. Okay. Oh, my God, I know that voice. That's my ex-girlfriend. Can you tell her I said hi? The insanity of lack of manners in the United States is just driving me insane. It's blowing my mind. Everyone, can you just, like, please go to Paris, please go to Portugal, please just sit in it for, like, 3 weeks and go, oh, why do I feel a little bit lighter here? Because everyone is kind of being more to themselves. They're friendly. They're not, you know, well, there's not as many people drunk bodies as you're walking over. They're there, but they're not like, you know, in your doorway. how did we get there? I got no clue. And that's why I don't listen to these shows, because if I listen to them, I will never do a Drinks with Tony again. But yeah, Les Miserables. Okay, another Bulgarian and writer I got into this year was Georgi Gospodinov. And I'm sure I mispronounced that, but the book was called Natural Novel. That was published in Bulgarian in 1999, translated into English in 2005. Thanks, Dalkey Press. I tried to read one of his other books, The Physics of Sorrow, and I couldn't get into it, but there was just something about Natural Novel that was just fantastic. Proust! I read The Prisoner, so that's volume 5 of In Search of Lost Time. That was this year. And, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm just looking at some notes here, and I've already said everything about Proust, I guess, earlier. Perfume and Pain by Anna Dorn. That was recommended from my friend Mark, is one of the few people who have read my novel that I'm querying now, Dreamcasting. And he's like, oh my God, dude, you got to read Anna Dorn. And I didn't know who she was. And now I'm a huge fan. And on my query comp letter, which I haven't sent any queries out in like 4 or 5 months. It's been a rough while. And now I'm going to send out about 4 or 5 queries this week. But my comp sentence on my query letter is the world building of the world building of Christopher Moore's Dirty Job Dreamcasting, my book, is the world building of is comparable to the comparable to the world building of A Dirty Job by Christopher Moore and the irreverent humor of Anna Dorn's Perfume and Pain. Like, that's my comps right now. I'm just so happy I found her. I love finding great contemporary authors, and I can't read more of her work. Speaking of not contemporary authors, I read Flannery O'Connor for the first time this year, and oh man, why did she die young? She only got 2 novels out of it. She only got 2 novels out of The Human Condition. And I read both of them, Wise Blood, but I gotta tell you, The Violent Bear It Away was better. I liked that one much better. Maybe because it's a little more biblical? I don't know. No, I think Wise Blood was really biblical. But it just didn't hit me the same way The Violent Bear It Away does. Sometimes you gotta die young and pretty at 39 and just write 2 great books. 2 great books and out! 2 great books and out. And I'm hoping for 12 mediocre books and, oh, he's still here? That's what I want. That's my human condition experience as an author. I think he did, he's on book 14. I don't know what book he's on. He's still around. Prop me up and put me in front of a room of 12 people so I can take questions. Yes. Oh, that's a good question. How to get an agent. Do you have a book? No. Oh, you got a good idea? Okay, cool. Well, that's how you get an agent. You just have a good idea. You think something. You think something in your head, kid. Then you go out there and you say, hey, agent, I got something thought in my head. And they go, oh my God, you have a thought? And you go, yeah, it's a thought. Can I tell you? And they're like, oh, but please sign the contract first so we make sure that we're working together. Because if you have an idea, that just means something. Hashtag sarcasm. Hashtag sarcasm. Next up, The Stronghold by Dino Buzzati. I feel like I talked about this already because I did a whole thing on Italian writers earlier this year. What a great book. Days Between Stations by Steven Erickson was also this year in my top list. The Score by Richard Stark. It's a Parker novel, and I really got into the Parker novels. And then all of a sudden, Mark Wahlberg is playing Parker in a movie this year. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, I love Mark Wahlberg. He's the guy when he takes his shirt off. It's like, wow, how did you do that? And he was taking his shirt off, was it in the early 90s for underwear ads as Marky Mark? And it was like, damn, dude, look at that one. I can't say what the word's called, the other word for his abs on radio. Oh, you know that song, Come Together? And do you know that word, gutter? Okay. Take out the word together in the middle. He's got those. And he's still got them, and he's in his 50s. Good for him. Wakes up every morning at 4 a.m. and eats his Cheerios. All right. Taste. This is also on my list of this year. Noel Clad's A Taste for the Brilliance. I never heard of this guy, and I loved it. It was in the 1960s. Los Angeles, and the guy is cheating on his wife on a business trip and gets all tangled up in a mess. But I remember a lot of the book, but the thing that I remember the most was how disgusted, or I think it was everyone around him kind of going, because his wife wouldn't shut up about the price of coffee. And so he's like, that was his main complaint against his wife. He didn't want to go back to New York so he could hear his wife complain about the price of coffee. And I just think that's such a hilarious, specific thing to ruin a relationship for. She won't shut up about the price of coffee. And I'm like, part of me gets that, because I do look at the price of coffee and I'm like, why is coffee going up? And then in my head, I don't shut up about the price of coffee. And I remember the book and it just tickles me pink. I'm still reading Crime and Punishment. I keep setting it aside, though. When you come from a family of psychotics, sometimes you don't want to read about psychotics. So, Dostoevsky will be set aside for a little bit. Also, I just read this book called Sophia by, it's either Michael Bible or Michael Bible. I think it's Michael Bible. With the last name Bible. It's either going to be great or the worst thing ever, and it was great. So, and he's got a new book, his book came out this year, which I need to read. It's on Clash Books, and it's called Little Lazarus. But Sophia was fantastic. I think that came out in 2016, and these are the contemporary books where I'm like, thank you. It's, there's a bit of I just had my Spanish lesson, so my brain is a little whacked because I was talking in Spanish in grade school Spanish to my Spanish instructor. But I was telling him about reading Michael Bible's book Sophia, and I said this in Spanish, but I can't say it now because I can't think in Spanish when I'm talking English, because that's where I'm at in my lesson. But I was just saying it's got a little bit of blasphemy, it's a little bit of it's a little biblical, and it's got like heart, it's got a heart and a soul to it, and that's kind of all I need. And then I now know the words blasphemy and well, I know heart. And but anyway, I have to go over my lesson because my brain is fried from being in this. I just don't know how people learn new languages or how people can switch languages mid-sentence. We have a little French joint where this woman used to run it, and then she sold it, and she would switch from French to English to Spanish without even skipping a beat. Her cooks would come out and she'd be in Spanish. Her co-owner would come out and it would be French, and then she'd turn around and talk English to you. And I'm just like, how do you do that? Like, I gotta sit down and do like brain stretches for 10 minutes before I even start to embark on talking in another language. And I can't even talk in English right now because I didn't do my brain exercise after talking in Spanish. But those are some of the books that really just were really good. And I'm reading this novel right now called Never Any End to Paris by, what's his name? Never Any End to Paris by Enrique Villamatos. And it's a blast. I guess Paris, that brings us back to Paris. I had very severe agoraphobia, anxiety, and depression. Oh, nice cut there. Yeah, feel good movie of the year. Keep listening. it was so severe, I checked myself into the hospital, I think, in 2011, because it was just really bad. And if anyone's suffering from it, bless your heart, it gets better. It gets better to the point where you just fly to Europe and you bop around Europe. And that wouldn't have even, I didn't think I was ever going to travel again. Traveling out of my apartment to go two blocks away in San Francisco was a sheer disaster and white knuckle. It was just brutal. It was really brutal. It wasn't fun. But exposure therapy is key, and changing life and changing lifestyle a little bit and shifting things up just a little bit every day. It's almost like you got, so they hear the words that, because here's how I was able to, I didn't conquer it. I'm in the process of conquering it to a degree where I can travel now and do many things, but I couldn't. But the words that shifted me were not trying to get anxiety down. That's the wrong approach, and I didn't know that. The word is brave. You need to be brave in the face of anxiety. And the next word is resilient. And the next word is, guess what? Life is uncomfortable. And there's these guys, they do this channel on YouTube called Yes Theory. I like them. They're kind of dumb, but I don't know why I find them dumb. But I think I find them dumb because they're a little too como se dice. They're a little too enthusiastic. Yes. So it's not dumb. It just feels like a fake enthusiasm because they're kind of a wink and a nod to the camera. But I do think their enthusiasm is there. They just they mask it a little bit. And maybe that's why I'm not as in touch with them. And that's why they have millions of subscribers and I have 12. But what's the key to this? Oh, their motto is seek discomfort. And I think that's the thing. In the human condition, we do not get to be comfortable. We can have comfort sometimes, but trying to achieve comfort always will never happen. And I think that's one of the deregulating things that hurts when you're processing trauma in your life, when you haven't processed trauma and then it hits you. It's like, okay, here we go. It's beautiful because you seek discomfort, and that's what got me through my trip to Europe, because the last time I went to Europe was in 1996. And the next time I went to Europe was 2025, this year. So it was huge. And I never thought I would be able to travel again. And in the 90s, I thought my whole life was going to be travel. I really had it set. I was really setting it up where I was going to just bum around the world. And then that anxiety and the thing I couldn't explain hit, and it hit hard, and it shrunk my world, and fortunately it shrunk my world in San Francisco, which is a great place to have your world shrunk, especially when you're writing for the San Francisco Chronicle and going to see live bands. But so it was a big victory to finally seek the discomfort of being on an airplane across the Atlantic and seek discomfort of the whole thing. And I write a journal every day, and it's fun going back into my journal of when I was in Paris and when I was in Portugal, because it reminds me like almost how stressed out I was in certain places. Like even I was on the metro and I started to have a panic attack, and I just started writing, and the writing was a mess, but it got clearer and clearer, and then everything was okay again. And I went and had a lovely lunch with a friend of a friend writer who I can't wait to visit again when I get back to Paris. And I guess it's, I've learned to embrace this discomfort and also the anxiety, as anxiety is telling you something. And anxiety was telling me a lot of things. And I didn't even realize what it was. And it took a lot of years to kind of uncover it. But uncovering it has been probably the biggest reward of my life. And uncovering it also included reading novels every day. And then finally writing every day. And finally getting a novel out there. And I don't know if that helped, but it put me in a position to be around other people who were just as insane as me writing novels. And also, being with other creatives, we all tend to have some sort of major anxiety. And a lot of the times it's not discussed. I've tried to write a book about it, but it puts me in a bad place. And then I lose myself in it. And that's when the book isn't good. So I try to write about it, but I can't. But I guess I can talk about it, and just you'll sporadically hear it while you're driving down the 101. I know everyone hates that in the Bay Area. That's why I say it. The article of the, you're going to take the 280 to the 92, and then you take the 92 to the 880 or to the 680. like 50 people's heads just exploded. Like, those of you who are watching Pluribus and you know what I'm talking about, I just did to the people, to the others. Like, I did that to a lot of people listening right now up in the Bay Area. I think I'm just gonna end it here, because emotions running a little high today. For sad news. Sad news. Mom has stage 4 cancer. And it's very, so amazingly simple, yet so utterly complicated that they've complicated. They've done an amazing job complicating the whole thing. And I can't even write about it. And I can't even get into it. But it's, it's not good. So at the end of the year, what are you going to do? We reflect on what we have, reflect on our health. And that's the other thing. And this is what I'm telling students all the time in writing, because this is the joy we get as writers, is we get to write our characters into conflict and out of conflict. And our characters will either learn from the conflict, or they'll go deeper into they make a choice. They make a choice there. And every time we're hit with a major conflict in life, we get to make a choice of how to use that conflict. I think in the middle of grief, you kind of don't have the choice immediately. You just grieve. But when you've been in a situation with family that's been a pure untangled train wreck for decades, it's a little weirder. That's about all I can explain on that. But what it does remind us is, it reminds us that we're all human. And there's something lovely about the human condition. There's an urgency to get things done. There's an urgency to, if you're a writer or a reader, there's an urgency to read. I'm excited for my books for this year. I got, on my list that I want to read this year, I got Lost Illusions by Balzac, War and Peace, by Tolstoy. I'm going to read Victor Hugo's Hunchback of Notre Dame. And, I'm going to try Moby Dick this year too. So those are like the four beefy ones in between all the other stuff that I'm reading. And I'm very excited about that. So we're not at the end of the year yet. We're not out of the gate yet. Wednesday night. If you're listening after Wednesday night, we made it. We made it, and the aliens didn't attack. I worked at Hewlett Packard during the Yeah, I know. Everyone else goes, wait, you were in tech? I used to be in tech in the late 90s. And we were server administrators, as they called them. I don't know what they called them now. They call them now. I'm sure there's a fancier name. But we had to patch all the database servers and file servers and operating system servers with the patches so that we can get through Y2K. That was like 2 years of work. Made me a lot of money at the time. Glad my wife spent it all at the time. Divorced now. Great investment. But that's another complete issue. I don't even know why I brought that up. Pain, man, pain. But we all make choices too. And those choices are usually because we have unresolved pain that we are not working through. I keep learning the lesson over and over again. I hope I've learned it. Please, now make it stop. But I don't even know where I was going. Okay. Hey, I love you guys, man. Thanks for listening. And we got more authors coming on over the next year. And it's I just love doing this. And sometimes you just got to sit in your kitchen with a microphone and talk into a mic, and then it goes out to your ear holes. Have a great new year. If you're listening to this in 2026, I hope your new year was great and you didn't drink too much, and that there's a jubilance to going into January. And you know what? The world is blowing up. The world's blowing up. So what? Let the world blow up. What are we going to do individually for our souls? And what are we going to do for the souls of the people that we're actually standing in front of? What can we do for each other? That's all the important is, like, who's in your life? Who's there? Like, not there on the electronics, there in front of you. That's who we need to treat well. And we need to also maybe have some conflict there. And then when we resolve conflict, we hug it out. And life moves on. It's all cycles, I guess. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
One more man gone. One more man gone. One more man. One more man gone. One more man. One more man gone. One more man gone. One more man is gone. The good sun walks into the field. He is a tiller. He has a tiller's hands, but deeper down in his heart now, he's a laid down queer plans against his brother and against his family. Yet he worships his brother. Sun's kept and the night time in which he's wrapped speaks of good now, and it speaks of evil. And he calls to his mother, and he calls to his father, but they are dear in the shadows of his brothers. See you.
me now, baby, here as I am. Pull me close, try and understand. Desire is hunger, is the fire I breathe. Love is a banquet on which we feed.
Here in our bed until the morning comes.